Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post his alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Welcome to D&D Encounters, Season 12, Session 7. Many sessions this week. So let's get right into it. Welcome back again, Craig and Derek.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Craig, we'll start with you. I don't think we've started with you this season yet.
That's right, we haven't. Mm. I don't think. Maybe we have, I can't remember.
C'est la vie.
I was just agreeing. Indeed, yes. So this week I had the opportunity to run and as well play in the Caves of Chaos adventure. Which is, a lot of people I think did it first too, but so... The group that I ran, we did a little bit of role-playing ahead of time because I think when we left it off before, we hadn't quite finished up the role-playing sort of bit at the end of the... Which one was it? The second part of the Moat House. That was it.
Yeah.
So we had three of our players were absent this week. So I kind of just used that into the story. So these guys had decided to, you know, do an extended rest in the Moat House because they had the bed, they had the bunks there, they had the bed. So they had Laerith the Beautiful tied up, all beaten up in the corner. And during their rest, Laerith is busted, sort of doing some weird chanting that they're not able to identify. And one of the players who was absent had previously in the season decided he was going to be possessed by an essence of Miska at the very beginning. So as he was now absent, I used that as sort of the connector. That's how he was able to channel the energy in this one player character who was now made into an NPC. So that character suddenly gets up and in front of the party, they see his eyes sort of awash in this black misty glow as he walks towards Laerith's room. And they, you know, the people who were awake on watch at the time woke up the rest of the party, and they took a couple shots, knocked off the crown or the death circlet off his head. He went into the room and he started doing the summoning ritual, or the that little ritual that Laerith is supposed to complete in the previous encounter, because I never actually got to complete it before. So they get to witness the wolf spider's maw threatening the destruction of Homelane before they're able to drop their friend. However, their friend, I believe, sorry, he actually aged rapidly at the end and died. Because I figure, you know, he's gone for the rest of the season. His character does not survive this encounter.
Yeah, that was... So, just sort of interrupt. So, I'm one of the players at that table. So, we only had the three PCs that, like, this week. But right. We knew that two of the missing players, they had already said, due to previous commitments, they would absolutely not be there this week or next week. So, right. Craig took some good liberties with that to incorporate it into the story, which we had some fun with. I mean, unfortunately, this character gets killed off. The other character had a lot more fun.
The two characters are going to kill, because this one, after he sort of submitted to this ritual, his body energy was sort of used up to fuel it, and he just kind of collapsed in this, like, aged husk, lifeless body, kind of fell to the ground. And then you guys heard the Wilhelm scream coming from outside. And you had discovered your other friend, who did not join you into that room, had been deceived and murdered by Laerith the Beautiful, but you're able to quickly subdue Laerith again and decided it was time to move it on out of there because too much bad stuff was happening in this moat house. Well, so they brought him. Sorry?
It doesn't matter anyway, because you know Laerith the Beautiful comes back and returns to the Temple of Elemental Evil, which they're probably going to call Return to Homelane.
Ah, yes, very good. So basically, they march Laerith back to the town, bring him to the constable's office. And they also another one of the guys who is missing, who may show up again later, had vanished in the night as well. There were rumors that perhaps Sister Euphema had also vanished as well, so perhaps there was some something to do with that.
And if I remember correctly, the encounter where they were, where the party was at the temple, he had had a
sort of romantic rendezvous with her. Yeah, she was quite smitten with him. Yeah, I mean, he was a dragonborn, but he was a dashing dragonborn.
Of the Lawbringer faith, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. He just swept her off her feet, coming in, you know, checking and making sure that the Lawbringer's justice is being done. So, Yeah, so who knows what happened there. So anyway,
we had some fun explaining what happened to that character.
Exactly.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how did he find her?
Sorry, what was that? Oh, well.
I would think pretty high. If for those people listening, it's worth listening to our actual play recording from the Harry T. North session. Believe me, even if you just listen to that first half hour where we role play all this out, we had a lot of laughs. It was it was a lot of fun to play, and I got to think it's going to be just as much fun to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, the actual encounter where he had his role playing bit with her, unfortunately, Derek was not present and it was not recorded. But I know when he was doing it at the time, it was more of he was doing it as like, all right, I'm going to take one for the team so we can sneak around here unhindered by, but I got to think if he's disappeared in the middle of the night, you know, he must have liked something about her. But we'll see when he comes back, right? We'll see how he explains his absence to the party.
We'll see.
He went off and ran and joined Grand's brothel, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So they went around the town for a little bit, and they were tying up a couple of loose ends. Like, they went to go find Smythe the Smith. And,
Right, because we had a hook with him earlier in the adventure.
Yeah, yeah. And he had been sort of shuttered himself in with his family now, ashamed of how he was acting, because he was under the spell of the reptile god cult. And, I mean, he was quite ashamed. He had his poor, starving family was in there, and he was just sort of keeping in with them. Didn't want to face old Rami again. But Derek had tried to come in and, you know, tried to talk nice. So, like, you know, maybe you should really go over there and have a talk with him. But he was, you know, I don't know. After what I've done, I don't think he wants to see me. But Derek laid down the law just a little more sternly the next time. So he's promised to go and help out Rami. So they're getting ready for their mayor electoral run. And what else was going on? Because I know you guys kind of ran around the town and did a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, we went to the trading post.
Oh, right.
Did we go to the trading post? Oh, yeah, because I don't remember. Why did we go to the trading post?
You just wanted to see it, because you guys had planted the seed with the constable before, saying that, you know, someone busted in and stole stuff from the trading post.
Oh, yeah, right. We did that,
you had done such great stealth that you thought you would just go ahead and sort of add insult to injury there.
Right.
But yeah, they came in and they found the place had been ransacked and looted, and they even found the body of one of the owners there. It was, which one was the halfling? I can't remember if it was Raynan or Grimag. Grimag, yep. Yeah. Okay. So they found her body on the ground, so obviously a casualty of the aftermath. No sign of any police or constable investigation or anything like that though.
You guys are mean players.
Yes, well,
he didn't kill her. She was like that when we got here. We laid the seed of dissent, and we assumed the two of them fought it out, not trusting each other.
Exactly.
Nice.
Exactly as we planned. My character's totally evil. He had no problem doing that.
I mean, even like the encounter before when they found all the notes and everything like that, they did find sort of like personal journal entries for each one, blaming each other for the follies that they've had to this point. So there was already a seed of dissent in there.
Very good.
But yeah, so I mean, after that, then they did
off to the cave. No, where were we?
No, you did one more thing before you went. Oh, you went to go see Blackjay because you had spoken to Canoness Yide to see, you know, what she thought of everything. And both her and Ramna were rather busy. You know, Canoness Yide was a little overrun with responsibility now that Sister Euphema had left her kind of high and dry.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. So Sister Euphema had disappeared in the night. And, Ramna was still without, what's his name, the Smith. So he was also preparing because he had let them set up voting booths in front of the Druid's Grove for the upcoming election. So he was kind of busy with stuff too. But it seemed to be the consensus was that, you know, you guys have dealt with these bandits, you've dealt with these with the reptile god. You know, the missing piece of the puzzle here seems to be all this trouble going on with the Caves of Chaos, and you know, Blackjay over there, his son was a victim. So they went to go see what Blackjay might have known. He was a bit of a crusty, curmudgeon-y old man when they got there. But
what did it say in the description? He was a human herder.
A human herder. I got it when I was on the way home. It was they're saying he himself is a human and he is a herder.
That's what I thought, but when we were playing, Craig kept saying he's human herder, and we're
the way it's written though, it says he's crap.
That's a nice way of saying slave trader.
I'm gonna get it up for you right now because it was really that's what I was thinking when I was reading it.
And that's how Craig's playing. He's like, yeah, he's got some free range people in the back. They're just out there, you know, having some grass for dinner.
It says several dogs guard the modest cottage of Black Jay, comma, a grizzled human herder. So when I read it.
That's exactly how Craig read it.
Like, I read it like that. Herder? And then I did a double take myself. I was like, wait, what? So we had a little fun with that because, and then afterwards, and on the way home, I'm like, oh, I got it now. I'm so foolish. But the human herder. And basically that after that whole thing happened where he sort of spelled out, you know, what this is what happened to my son. Boo-hoo-hoo. I'm very sad. The players eventually decided to move on to the Caves of Chaos. There's just too much that was pointing that direction now. So couldn't be ignored anymore because I believe the last few sessions it was, well, we can deal with that later. There's this more pressing matter at hand. So they made their way down and, you know, it was quite, they had the obligatory encounter with Hafren Hamel, who accuses them, of course, of being agents of chaos. And I believe there's a couple hits until someone was able to diplomatize and talk him down.
Yeah, I was a little surprised that you had him actually attack us for damage. I was like, oh man, come on, because we flubbed our role so poorly. That's right. I mean, in retrospect, because we flubbed our role so poorly, he had no reason not to attack us. But I was just like, oh man, this is damage we shouldn't be taking. So, kind of insult to injury before we
But you know, there. I figured because I knew you guys had like a lot of controllery powers. I know, for example, Lindsay had a
Beguiling Strands.
Yeah, and she had also picked a new encounter power as well, which was quite souped up for, you know, this is without knowing that what a minion fest this was going to be.
Yeah.
So I'm like, you know what, there's going to be a couple hits. It wasn't going to be anything more serious than maybe one or two hits. Something would have happened, but I figured just to sort of keep everyone on their toes, especially since I know you know it, Derek, but no one else was necessarily aware of what was going to happen. So I thought it would be kind of fun to keep them on their toes. But, so that happened, and then they pointed it to the Caves of Chaos. They went in, and I started pulling the minions out, a lot of them from the outside, some of them from the inside. It went pretty well. You guys did pretty good. It wasn't overly...
Yeah, I was impressed and surprised, because we had one guy was playing an assassin. I'm playing an archer ranger, but I also am decent with melee, and I'm a hybrid druid, so I have an animal companion. But the companion is kind of soft, but at least he could potentially draw hits.
Yeah.
And then Lindsay's playing the wizard witch, so she had power. So between my twin strike and combined attack with the animal and Lindsay's beguiling strands, we were able to do pretty good against these
and
minions.
And she was hitting on every beguiling strands too, so it's just like, well, there's all the minions gone.
And then there was that amazing, I'm playing the ranger, and I took, what's it called, covering shot. And so it's a area burst one. So I waited for the minions to show up, and then I shot them all, killed them. I think there was four in the burst when I did it. And then it's like that; those nine squares, the 3x3, anything that goes in the squares before the end of your next turn, you just shoot it and kill it. You don't even have to roll. It takes 5 damage. So Craig had a whole bunch of minions just come barreling around the corner right into it, and he just left all the minions all overturned on the map. He's like, okay, you kill all of these minions before their turn.
Yeah, they just come in like lemmings rushing in because, I mean, they're not – they're just rushing in for the battle. They don't have time to stop and consider what's just happened, right?
Because of the way the power worked, I intentionally put it right around a corner so that they would really have no reason to not just barrel around the corner. So
that's one of those situations where you set up a trap like that, and of course, you know, a more devious DM, or dick DM might be like, you know what, they're all coming from the outside. So it's like, well, you just set this trap for nothing now.
Yeah.
It was a good trap, and I didn't want to see it wasted. I mean, you guys were already in the clear regardless, because I think you had already hiked out Otis, because all attempts at diplomacy had failed. So, like, you know what? Screw this. They just picked him up and took him out. So,
yeah, all we had left was the ogre, who was busy pounding on our weakest guy outside.
Yeah, and we had... you guys were pretty good there, and I just figured, you know what, I have all these other kobolds to come in. I can have them come in, harry these guys up. It's just going to, you know, cause a little bit more irritation, but they're going to be able to sweep them out, especially with Beguiling Strands and all these minion sweepers that they have. Or I could have a little fun with it and have them all just sort of rush in like a bunch of fools and Yeah. Have a bit of a slapstick moment there, and that's what I chose.
Was it the orcs that had the reaction power when they get killed?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that, in my opinion, they were the toughest because they hit the hardest, and they didn't drop with a single hit. They got a secondary attack, which, we got lucky. I think only one of the four connected on that second hit, but had they all connected, it would have been a whole new fight.
Yeah, because I believe, and they were, because it's just a standard action, and they also had an arranged standard action as well, right? So,
yeah, which I didn't realize when I had run it. So
when Lindsay pushed them back that one time, three of them only had like two guys in their crosshairs. So I mean, or I think it was just one guy in their crosshairs for their range.
It was
so,
me.
Oh, was it you? Okay.
They were all shooting at me, and I was like, "Uh oh, I'm going down if they all hit." Only one guy hit, so I lived.
Right. Okay, now I get it. Yeah. But and also those guys too. When I think it's the orcs, when they charge, they actually get a bonus to their damage as well.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. Jeez.
Yeah.
We got to start doing monster knowledge checks.
No, seriously.
Yeah, for sure.
That is the bane of my home campaign player, or the players in my home campaign.
Oh yeah. Everything. Just,
they're never doing monster knowledge checks. And I'm like, guys, come on.
My group's the opposite. Like, they walk right in, and it's like, monster knowledge. It's like, oh, come on, guys.
Yeah, I know.
They're drow. They have globes of darkness. Like,
yeah,
come on.
There's
got to
be
this.
A happy medium. Yeah,
but some of them have dark fire.
Yeah, but it's like that. It's like every time they encounter a monster, even if it's something they already know, it's like, okay, you know, it's a red dragon. Oh, we do a knowledge check. He breathes fire. Like, come on. It's the same as the last time he faced a red dragon.
Yeah.
Oh. Cool. But you know what surprises me the most? About, you know, I've listened to you and then Derek, and then I've listened to Craig talk about Caves of Chaos, and not once did I mention, and funny enough, not once did anybody ever mention Elmo.
Who?
Elmo, Otis's brother. He was the drunken guy at the
right, yeah, he's at the
Serpent.
Yeah, the Slumbering
Serpent, yeah. And yeah. he was like one of the more, to me, the more integral characters in both Return to the Temple of Elemental Evil and the Temple of Elemental Evil. So I found it funny that I haven't heard anybody talk about Elmo at all, except for me.
I don't remember those adventures very well, because it's been so long since I played them. I mean, I'm familiar with them enough that I recognize the maps and the locations, but I haven't recognized any of the NPCs' names. Like you had mentioned, Lareth the Beautiful is in that other one. You couldn't have paid me for that. I had no idea.
Yeah, see, Lareth comes back and returned to the Temple of Elemental Evil. They resurrect him. He's integral in Zagutmoy's coming back to whatever.
Whoa. Spoiler alert. Holy cow, dude.
Yeah. No,
like
but
a 30-year-old module.
But it's funny because I have this, the game, and you know, the game, the Temple of Elemental Evil, and Elmo is one of the big ones, right? You know, you could pick up player characters as you go along. And right. Elmo's one of them, and he walks around always in a drunken stupor. So it's pretty funny. Like he's
oh okay yeah
is
yeah,
he a
yeah,
dwarf?
Yeah yeah I know
no he's about. Human
because he's in a drunken stupor in the Slumbering Serpent. But you know the thing is though is that Elmo's not really prominently featured in anything. Where there's other NPCs that sort of take center stage a little more. So I mean I know definitely for the table both the one that I played at and the one that I ran, there's like maybe and. A brief scenario where they visited the Slumbering Serpent, and that was it.
Oh, see, that's where my guys started, and it all tumbled down from there. And that's what they saw the guy sitting at the bar, drinking alone, all drunk, so they thought they could take advantage of him, but really he's like an undercover cop, right? He's looking for his brother, and that's that was a big thing. So anyway, no, I found it interesting that nobody took advantage of Elmo, or nobody remembered Elmo.
Yeah, no, I don't even remember him from the module anyway. So right. I'm in the same boat as Derek, I think. Where it's like those types of things like I hadn't played for or seen in a very long time, other than, like you said, some maps and certain names and events sort of ring bells. But, yeah. Indeed.
So then, Craig, how did your other group go where you were the player at the Caves of Chaos?
So it went, the encounter went similarly. Although I think as players in this one, it went a lot quicker. So as you remember, I came by to wave goodbye a lot sooner because we kind of just went right into it. We were basically on our way to the Caves of Chaos right from the get-go. And, you know, we started off and we decided we're going to stealthily sneak up because, you know, we had the whole encounter with Hafren Hama, which kind of played out just, you know, just as it is in the module. So we decided, you know, let's try and sneak up. Let's not attract any attention if we're going to get, you know, crowded by these beasts. We just want to take it easy. But basically, we got right down there, and there were kobolds just waiting for us. There was no sneaking up to cave looking for traps. It was just, look, there's a whole bunch of minions surrounding this area after you guys make it right down here. So it just got right into it. So we had to fight our way in, which was it was a little bit difficult, but a couple of the guys were able to make it through. One of them decided to make a mad dash in. So he triggered the roof trap. It's funny because he still triggered the bells, but it didn't matter because the monsters were already aware of us. So
yeah.
But anyhow.
Now, do you think the DM did that because he knew your party was experienced enough, or just that was his choice?
I think that was just his choice. I think it's because they discussed, let's try and go stealthily, and half of us did not roll very well. Actually, okay. No, I should say three of the four, because it was a table of four tonight, three of us did not roll well. I rolled okay, but it was still on the low end of okay, whereas two guys were like single digits lower end, oh, and then one dude kind of nailed it, but... Beyond that, the description was basically that we were just like one guy moving with the shadows with three bumbling idiots behind him. So I think it was sort of like we kind of like wrote our own fate there, that we were trying to be sneaky. So it's like, okay, well, you're not sneaky. You're very loud and obvious, and let's do it like this kind of thing.
Okay. No, but again, like all three of us talked about how would you run this, because we knew this session was going to be played by a lot of people this week, and none of us suggested having the monsters there, so you got to fight your way in. I think that's an interesting call from your DM to do that. It's like, you know, three of us, like we thought we had covered everything. We're like, oh man, any possible thing, here's how you could do it. Well, none of us came up with that. Like, it's amazing how, you know, just that seems so obvious and simple now, but none of us thought.
Well, maybe
of it.
We have enough people listening to the podcast that the DM thought, you know what? Well, they all know what's coming. They all know that it's in waves and all that kind of stuff. Here, let me change it up a bit.
Yeah, no, I like it. I mean, I'm sure it made the encounter more difficult. And if you didn't have guys that had powers that could attack multiple monsters, like it could have been really ugly. But from the sounds of it, your party did okay.
I think all of us had at least one or two controller E powers, so we were able to deal with it pretty easily. Like I said, two of the guys went into the cave and they sort of had their little thing with Otis. But he went through the regular, like, oh, you know, Otis wakes up like, you can't take the sword from me, and then they do the diplomacy, and he finally thankfully they nailed the diplomacy on the second attempt, so he gave it up, and they healed him up and were about to head out, but that's when the ogre came. So the ogre he had coming from the inside, and it was well timed in that the two guys were in the, you know, were in the grotto still when the ogre came in and sort of closed them off from the exiting into the outside world. And the first thing it does, it freaking charges in, critical hit, and that thing does some serious damage.
Oh man!
It knocked. I mean, there's a drow in our party, and he's the one who took the hit. He was already like riding at like 3 hit points or something like that, so it brought him down to negative 20 some odd, and he was, I think it was 2 points away from just being outright dead.
Wow.
But thankfully the guy he was with is a leader, so he was able to bring him back on his feet again, and we were able to push the ogre back a little bit. Those guys were able to run by. They had to provoke opportunity, but it was like, it's either that or just definite death, right? So, but we were able to make it out.
Cool.
Off the map. Cool. And escaped. Yeah,
good. So that's good. Again, you two encounters, you'd figure they're going to run pretty similar, but it sounds like there was quite a bit of variation between the two. We've said this a few times on the podcast, it really seems to come down to who's at the table. What is your party made up of? Do you have controllers? Do you have strikers? Yeah. Like, you know, if you've got guys that know how to play their role, and you got the proper balance, you're gonna be able to do it.
Yeah, I mean, the four guys at my table playing tonight, I mean, all four of us you know, we're no newbies at all. Like, we're all pretty old D&D players. And between the four of us, I say there was one competent controller's worth of powers in there.
Yeah. Nice. Oh, sounds good. So, Mark, what about you? How did your week go? Which you were running backwards, right?
Yeah, I was running backwards. It's always been an interesting, for the last 3 weeks, it's been very interesting at my table. I had to catch up from 2 weeks prior because I forgot, like I said, once again, forgot to give the adventure to my alternate DM and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, they ended up at the Temple of the Lawbringer at the bottom. They had finished with Devi and basically decided to start taking the tunnel. They went up through the well area. I think that's a borrowed idea, wasn't it?
Yeah, I came up with that last week.
Yeah, so I used that idea too, and I said, okay, well, you figure out that this is kind of like a food supply train, blah, blah, blah. So they went down the tunnel. They ended up at the end of the Winsome Wench, And they went up and they searched around. They didn't find much. They found a couple of gold pieces. They found a potion of healing. And they decided to go up the stairs. And I said it was pretty ragtag. And, you know, you should do a stealth check to go upstairs, to do it very quietly, very silently, less weight, you know, all that kind of stuff. So they went upstairs, no problem. They look around. They say, oh, this is where we are in town. Okay, well, let's go back into the tunnel. No sense going into town. So they went back down. I set a trap. Guy fell, took some falling damage. It was pretty fun. It was a lot of little role-playing, right? Because I didn't want to get into any kind of serious combat because I still had one adventure to catch up on. I had to do Lair at the Beautiful. So we went back down the tunnel, saw the Bullywugs in the other part of the tunnel. They killed them off pretty quick, and they went into...
You just had the two Bullywugs?
Yeah, just two Bullywugs.
How many people were in the party that you were running?
We were four. Three.
So they had the Bullywugs outnumbered, really, is what I was...
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
So like I said, it was a quick go-to. It was a quick little combat. It went very, very quickly. It was nice. They went into the bottom of the Golden...
Golden Grain.
Golden Grain Inn. I keep forgetting that name. The Golden Grain Inn. So they went in there, and they heard some people, like, basically partying upstairs. And so one of the party members just basically said, oh, why don't we just torch the place, get rid of this place? And we're like, come on. Really, I had this whole thing because we had discussed it on the podcast last week, and I'm like, took a bunch of little ideas and said, all right, let's go this way. Let's burn the inn down. And thank goodness one of the other players piped up and said, no, what if there's stuff around here? What if there's, you know, like a magic weapon upstairs?
So hang on, let me get this right. They had no problem burning it down and having all those people die, but they were worried that if they burned it down, the magic treasure might disappear.
Correct.
Okay, I just want to make sure we have the priorities straight.
Sounds about right.
Yeah.
Well, I think after that, I'm like, really? He says, yeah, my character's evil. Meanwhile, it said good on his sheet, but he says, I'm going evil. All right, go evil.
just a random alignment change in the middle of an event. Yeah.
Exactly.
Was he wearing the crown of the serpent god or something, and his alignment shifted?
Well, this is another funny story. What happened, we got the crown. After we got the crown... basically went up to the guy that was wearing a crown, which is a fighter. He says, okay, well, I stealthily take it off his head while he's, you know, doing something else. He rolls like a 28 versus the guy's insight of 8. So all of a sudden, I go, really? Now you have both items, right? And he's sitting there laughing. So he says, I hold up the circlet in front of the dwarf now, and I go, nah, 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 nah. He goes, give that to me. And it was almost some in-party fighting. It was really fun to watch.
Nice.
Then they went upstairs. First thing he did, charges Bertram, the bartender. I have no idea why. I don't know if he... I don't think he's caught up on the podcast at all.
He's lying. He totally has.
Yeah, probably. So so he charges Bertram.
Yeah, seriously.
And he basically threatens him. Bertram's like, whoa, 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 what's going on? He says, you've had nothing but people come and try and kill us this whole adventure. La, 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 la. Bertram's like, no. Look, I can explain everything. He says, we were under the control of some... I don't know what it was, but I was having nightmares of this snake with a woman's face, and just all of a sudden I remember doing these bad things. He goes, you're lying. Come on, guys, let's take this bar down. I'm going, really? So anyway, so it went on and on and on. And then finally, you know, they did some insight checks. The party members actually had to do diplomacy checks to get the party member to back down from killing Bertram, because other people in the bar were actually starting to draw swords. They were happy when they got up there. They were clinking glasses. Long and short, they were celebrating the fact that they were no longer possessed by the reptile god. And then it digressed, and Bertram said, you know what? I have some fine alcohol here. Why don't we just crack the bottle? It's on the house for tonight. All that kind of stuff. And they said, all right. So they calmed down a little bit. Then we played the games. We went over the games long with Craig. So, yeah, they played the games. We lost every single one of them, except for who was the one that... The plus one dagger. That was the darts, right? No, that was the arm wrestle.
I think it was the arm wrestle. Craig did it with the darts.
I did with the darts, yeah.
Yeah, but the arm wrestle, my player just killed. Just long and short, it was just bam, bam, and that was it. So walked away, Bertram was laughing, and that was all that kind of stuff. And then how did they get... they said, okay, well, since this is whatever, they did an extended rest. They're a little bit behind when it comes to extended rests. And then they went, they said, you know what, we have a score to settle with this moat house. So before that, they decided, and funny enough, they went up to the Temple of the Lawbringer again. and they went up and wanted to talk to Sir Moonbrook to see if they can get a little more information. And that's where, you know, they found the message of, you know, backwards, the backwards message. Yeah, pray backwards.
Oh, how, they hadn't done that yet.
No.
Oh, because you did them in the reverse order. Right.
Right. Okay. So then after that, we found the journal. And then in the journal, you know, I'm saying, oh, well, password, you've got a journal. The guy goes, oh, well, I read the journal. I'm like, okay, well, the password is this. So they get into the temple. We were running short on time, so I just decided to make a nice, simple fight. It was a good fight with Lareth. They went in. They managed to bluff their way into the room. They got past all the minions. I had four minions there, and the two guards and Lareth. They managed to totally bluff their way past the guards and go into Lareth's temple. They waited till he finished his chant, and then they were just going to take him prisoner, and one guy said, no, I just go and kill him right away. On the surprise action turn, he charged him, hit him. Then they all went before Lareth again. And he came out with like 80 hit points of damage right away. It was pretty. It was a pretty short fight, but we finished on time. They defeated Lareth, and now they know where they have to go. And so next week is basically the finale. So it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun, a lot of little role playing. I mean, I didn't go through the whole role playing thing with you, but we had a lot of fun at the bar. We had a lot of fun with Bullywugs. We went to a lot of places in town, and so. We're pretty much caught up with everybody now, and we're actually going in correct order now.
Cool. So with my group, we did the lower level of the moat house. So in week two, they went to the moat house. In week seven, they went and did the bottom part of the moat house. Like it bookended their adventure. We had a little bit of role play at the beginning. They last week, what did they do last week? I don't even remember. Help me out here, guys. What did we do last week? Oh, the reptile god.
Yeah.
And, oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, so I said, I'm like, you guys start off, you're back in the town, you're really exhausted, you've been, because they did their whole Golden Grain Inn, Temple Lawbringer, like that whole arc was done at night. So I'm like, you guys are exhausted. Like, by the time you get back to town, it's like 10 a.m., you haven't slept in over 24 hours, you are beat. So they're like, okay, fine. We go to sleep. If they get a room and away they go. And so I'm like, okay, no problem. Time passes. You wake up. It's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm like, what are you gonna do? So they go and they interact with some of the NPCs, and they realize that a lot of the people in the town had been under the hypnosis of the reptile god. And so I said that, I'm like, a lot of the people seem embarrassed or ashamed of the fact that they were weak or that they were forced to take, you know, unscrupulous actions. But I said, there are some you realize that weren't under the hypnosis of the reptile god who were just doing bad things because they could. They saw an opportunity to do something and they did it. So I said, you know, the townsfolk are sort of not really sure how to handle that. So, of course, one of the PCs is like, well, let's go get the constable. We'll have him weigh in. So they go to the constable's office. I'm like, well, the first thing you notice when you go in is none of the bandits are there anymore. And so one of the characters is like, hey, constable, when did the jailbreak happen? And I'm like, okay, make an insight check. And he's like, oh, yeah, it happened while you were off in the middle of the night. They must have hit me from behind. I don't know. It was clearly an inside job. I don't know what happened. And they're like, yeah, roll insight. It like rolled like a 19 or something. I'm like, oh, he's totally lying. And they're like, great. He just let them go? And I'm like, I don't know. He's not talking, but it's clear that he knows more about what happened. I'm like, fine. And then someone's like, hey, we should go over to the trading post. Because remember, the one guy we let out of the prison a few weeks ago, that's where he went. And they're like, yeah, maybe they're over there. So I borrowed what Craig had done with us in the earlier session. And when they got there, I was like, you know, it's been ransacked. And they looked around. I'm like, you find it. Basically what they were able to figure out is it looks like a whole bunch of people came in, took supplies and hit the road. And when they went in the warehouse, it's like, yeah, there was a wagon that was in here, but it's gone. Like, it looks like whoever was here took off in a hurry. And they're like, oh, man, we searched through. Is there anything valuable? And I'm like, yeah, in the back of the shop, you find a crate. And, of course, one of the guys made a huge show about, I check for traps, I check for magic, because every week that's become his thing after getting burned a few times. And he doesn't open anything without checking for traps now. And so, like, nice. I really played it up. I was like, oh, yeah, you're all like, oh, my God, stay back. Traps could be traps. So I was like, no, it's just a regular old box. So he opens it up. I'm like, there are these fine yellow cloaks in there. And they're all like, ooh, what do they look like? And so I'm really hamming it up. I'm like, oh, they're finest silks, and they've got gold embroidery. I'm like, they're the they're awesome. And everyone's like, ooh, I put one on. Except this one guy, he's playing a draw. He's like, no, I'm not putting these on. And they're like, okay, fine. I'm like, there's plenty there. They're like, we take all the extras. They're probably worth money. I'm like, oh, they're worth big money. You could sell them in like a big town. And they're like, great. All right. We got some treasure out of this. They're all wearing the yellow cloaks. They go walking into town and people are freaking out. Oh my God. And they're like, what's the problem? Only the friggin' cult people wear those cloaks. What are you doing? And they're like, oh, we look like cult people. Okay, we get it. So like, you know what? Let's just go out to the moat house and finish this off. So they get to the moat house and they want to like, I'm like, do you just want to say you're at the moat house and use the password and go? And they're like, no. We approach. We want to see if maybe somebody's been there. And they like, you know, they want to do some role play. So I got no problem with that. So they spent 10 or 15 minutes. I'm like, you're just going to go in the front door? And they're like, no. There's these secret passage, the crumbled passageways on the side. We're going to split up and each go through. So the one group goes. He's like, I check for traps. Okay, fine. Make a roll. He finds a trap. But of course, I don't tell him whether he's successful or not. I pause and I go to the other group. I'm like, okay, what are you guys doing? And they're like, the guy's like, I just go right in. I'm like, you checking for traps? He's like, no, my character doesn't check for traps. He's a stupid barbarian. He wants to go in and kill something. I'm like, well, how close are the rest of you to him? And they're like, oh, it's dark. We're going to be right on his butt. Fine. Boom. Steps on the trap. Whoosh. They set off the alchemist fire. It's 2d6 plus 6. I rolled two sixes. So I'm like, okay, 18 fire damage all around. Then I cut back to the other scene. I'm like, you find a trap. And in the distance, you see this giant fire arc go off. Whoosh. So they're like, okay, we know what this trap does. So three of the characters used their second wind before they even went downstairs because they were hurt. Then they went down the stairs and we had to do the encounter. So now I found the map that was provided. It's good, but the description is that they go down this long passageway before they get to where the guards are. So I actually brought a couple of extra dungeon tiles to extend the length of that runway. So I had the characters start on the new tiles. I'm like, you guys come down the stairs and it's dark. But off in the distance down the passageway, you see there's torches and you can see a couple of guys. But I'm like, they can't see you right now because you're in the darkness. Because the party all had dark vision or low light, so they didn't have torches. So the one guy playing the drow who's not wearing the cloak, he's like, I'm going to just stay right here at the end of the tunnel in the darkness so they can't see me while you guys go up. They're like, okay. So they go up and they have a little chit-chat with the guards. They're all wearing the yellow cloak, so no problem. They get through. And I keep asking the other guy, I'm like, you going to come up? No, I'm chilling out. I'm just hanging out here in the hallway. I'm like, okay, fine. And so the rest of the party goes up. They go into where Lareth the Beautiful is. Now, last week, Priestess Devi got away. So I included her in this encounter. So I had her in the little bedroom where he's doing his ritual. And, of course, I have her in the corner behind the brazier. So they don't see her immediately, or they don't know who it is. And so they come in, they go on the carpet, and then I'm like, there's a figure there who's like kneeling down praying. She's wearing one of the yellow cloaks. And of course, somebody says, because I used the same mini for Devi last week as this week. And he's like, oh my God, is that the girl who got away last week? I was like, oh, well, make a perception check. I'm like, it could be. I'm like, she raises her head. I go, she recognizes you. She sees you're wearing the crown from the serpent god. And she's like, master, those are the ones I was telling you about. So then immediately Lareth is like, guards, to me, we've been infiltrated. So the whole dungeon is on alert. And so the party, there's four of them in the room fighting. And then the one guy's still way down at the end of the hallway. And he's just not doing anything. And they're like, come on, you got to help us. He's like, no, I'm going to chill out down in the hallway. And the first round of combat was ugly. Lareth did his big attack, the blast one versus Will. And I rolled amazing. I hit everybody. They're all bloodied. The two guards come in. They do their big attack, the 2d10. They both hit. It's like, oh, it was ugly. Everyone was like near death. And then the party managed to come back. The barbarian used his big daily power. And he did like 50 points of damage. He used an action point. The slayer threw on the power strike. So they managed to take out Devi before she even got to act, which was good because she had a lot of powers that would have hurt them. And they brought Lareth to bloody like early into the second round. So that helped considerably. Meanwhile, finally, the drow, he decides, he's like, I'm going to fire a magic missile down the hallway at one of these guards. So basically now the guards knew he was there. And he's like, now I pop up my globe of darkness. So they shine like a lantern down the hallway. And of course, the magic darkness, they can't see through it. Like, where the hell did that come from? So I basically had all the minions go down to the front door to see what was going on. And although they don't have crossbows in their stat block, I just said, oh, they got crossbows. So they're aiming randomly into the darkness and missing horribly. Like they're not coming anywhere close to the guy's AC, especially through the darkness. And then once the darkness drops, they see him because his stealth check was like a 7. I'm like, yeah, they shine a light on you. They can see you. So they all start charging down the hallway, two at a time, because only two guys can get close to him. Oh, man. They were not hitting him at all. I was rolling terrible. And then he has a reaction power where he can turn it on, and he gets resist five. And I had the minions going at two different points in the initiative. So at one point, two minions run down. They both hit, but the resistance was enough to shrug off all the damage. Then two more came down on the next round, and they hit him, but the resist was still on. So within three rounds, the wizard had taken out all eight minions. So that would have been a total game changer had he been with the party and all the minions just funneled into the room. But because he was able to draw them all away from the main fight, the rest of the guys in the room were able to take out Lareth and Priestess Devi and the two guards. But it was close. We had one of the guys failed two death saves before he was revived. Two of the other characters were making death saves at some point in the adventure. But the healer, the leader, took combat medic, so she could do heal checks as a minor action during combat. That made a huge difference. Every round, including the first round, she had to do a heal check on somebody. So it was just a good array of powers from the group. They got lucky. They had terrible rolls the first round, but then they had some good rolls later in the combat, and they finally managed to take everyone down. It was a very, very close call, but all in all, they did good. It was a lot of fun, and we're all looking forward to seeing how things go next week.
Indeed.
Now, I got a question for you guys. Mark, you had brought this up, that when the PCs were interacting in the town, somebody had given them a healing potion. I know during the course of this season, I'd given out, I think, three healing potions based on role-playing encounters, partly because I knew the party that's running in my group, they don't have a full leader, or they didn't until last week, and they needed the extra healing resources. So I've been doling out a couple of potions. Craig, Mark, have you guys been handing out any? I know there's a couple in the actual adventure. It says, like, if you interact with this person, they give you a potion. But have you guys been giving out free healing potions?
I have not.
I have. I gave out the ones that are already in the adventure, assuming it was looked for. But I haven't, because we've had two leaders in our party pretty much throughout the entire season.
That's a good point. Yeah, and my character's the hybrid, so we've had two full leaders, and then I'm the half leader. So I don't think our table has really
It hasn't felt like it was a precious necessity or a resource that was needed.
We had a leader for the first few sessions, but he got killed off, so he decided to come back as a different character. So I decided to just basically throw in a couple of healing potions here and there, because they've been using them, and they've been using them very wisely. So in combat, instead of doing a heal check or second wind, they've been reviving with potions. So since no leader, they have been using them wisely, and they've used up their whole stash basically. So I throw one or two in once in a while. I think it just helps the party and it motivates them also.
Yeah, and I've been using them almost as a reward. Like, if you guys have a good role-playing encounter with an NPC who would have that resource available, especially if it's one of the priestesses or the druid. I mean, the druid has one anyway, but like to your point, I use it as a reward. I think they even used a healing potion on Otis when they were in the caves. Yeah, so it's like they haven't been using them selfishly. Like, they've been using them. The person who's got it on their sheet is using it themselves. In most cases, they're using it on someone who's already unconscious. And being the guy who is unconscious on a couple rounds in a row really sucks. So I'm always impressed when a guy is like, I give up my action to help my guy. And I have no problem giving them potions as a freebie, especially if they're going to use them that way. So
right.
Yeah, and the one I'm playing at, we've been given a couple of extra ones on top of the ones that are already in the adventure as well. Like tonight, after we did Caves of Chaos, we came back and we had a brief. Oh no, sorry, it was before we actually went out to the Caves of Chaos. Because like I said, we kind of went right into it, but he did give us just a very brief interlude to shop around for stuff. However, since there's not really going to be a whole lot of stock, there was sort of, he would just explain how we were able to put together a couple potions of healing or whatever we're looking for. So yeah, a couple extra things that aren't actually included in it.
Right.
Yeah. And the consumables are easy that way. It's different if you're handing out a sword plus one, but the potions, I got no problem with that. I think especially with the low-level adventures, because a lot of the characters, they don't even get 10 hit points back with a surge. So not only do they get to use the heal, but they're going to get more hit points back using the potion than they would just triggering a second wind. So you know, at the low levels, it's a really good reward that's relatively cheap and isn't unbalancing.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, next week we've got the grand finale. So no matter what order you've played any of the previous encounters, everybody plays the same finale. And everybody should hopefully have all three items by now because they've done all the adventures where you get them.
I was going to say the circlet, the scroll, and the sword.
Correct. Yeah. Now, I got to admit, I'm playing at one table and I'm DMing at one table. And so because I'm playing first, I haven't read the finals. I have no idea what's coming up. And since it's not one of the ones we've talked about on the podcast, I'm really looking forward to how this is going
to
end.
So are you going to keep it you're going to keep a virgin to it until Monday night then?
Yeah, I'm not going to read it, which unfortunately means I'm going to have very little time to prep between the time I play and the time I run it. But I find that even having gone through them as a player is usually enough immersion that going back and like I think it only runs like 4 or 5 pages in the adventure. So,
yeah.
You know, once I see sort of from the player's point of view, what are the monsters, where are they, and what's the objective, then I can usually get up to speed pretty quickly. But I'm really looking forward to it. I've had a lot of fun this season, and I can't wait to see how Craig tries to kill the party.
Ends in a TPK.
Yeah.
Very good.
So, okay. So until next week, then, I guess we're waiting anxiously for the finale.
Sounds good. So this concludes D&D Encounters Season 12 Against the Cult of Chaos Session 7. Next week, final week. We'll see everybody next week.
You can follow me on Twitter at Amaron_DM and be sure to visit DungeonsMaster.com for original D&D 4th edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D encounters. That's 20footradius20ftradius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.